T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go heavy.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Prado hits a bouncer back to the mound. Ryan will get the man in a rundown. No, he throws to first as a run scores. The throw to third in time there, but a run scores on the play.
Who is most responsible for the Cubs' ninth inning meltdown that blew a 4-3 lead?
Look, they lost a game after winning 7 in a row. It's called baseball. That loss to the Marlins was almost predictable. You're not going to win every game. In order, I thought Pedro Strop was just bad. Joe left him in too long, and Kyle Ryan had a brain cramp. So that's the order in which I'll go with it. But you can't live and die on every game in a baseball season, guys. I get it. Theo says that there's got to be a sense of urgency.
October starts in March.
It's a difficult thing to balance. You shouldn't lose to that team. You shouldn't lose to that team at home. You shouldn't have a 3-0 lead and then let them back in the game. And you certainly shouldn't be walking guys late in the game.
Mully and Hall.
I think they're kind of kindred spirits in a sense.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
When should the Cubs try to lock Baez up long term?
March. Spring training was a great opportunity. I thought he was going to be the guy that left Arizona with a new contract instead of Kyle Hendricks. I still think there is work to be done, and you can take advantage of this window this season. I don't know how the Cubs feel about doing business during the season, but they do have a representative in Javi Baez's agent who also represented Kyle Hendricks. I think both sides should be motivated to get together to figure something out. You did hear Javi Baez tell A-Rod,
I would love to stay here my whole career.
Anything the Cubs can do in that direction would be good business.
Mully and Hall.
That loss last night was an absolute kick between the legs.
On 670 The Score.
A shot to the nether region? Is there no other way of saying that than the way Dustin just
said?
Well,
it kind of makes a point. He's right.
Yes, all right.
A lot of Cub fans felt the same way.
You felt kicked?
Yeah. Ow!
Yeah. Uh-oh, here he comes. It's just I found it slightly crude.
I thought it was fine. I approved. I approved of that right. Message.
It's Mully and Hawn the Score, and these guys get away with this stuff.
My onions were chopped.
Oh, boy. So we mentioned before the break the Ninth Commandment and the Ninth Amendment and the Ninth Bears kicker.
Speaking of kicks.
Eddie Pinheiro. Yeah, exactly. Eddie Pinheiro was a high school soccer player. He was a four-time All-Dade County selection. And then his senior year, he started kicking. Then he went to a junior college and then wound up at the University of Florida and ended up – he had another year of eligibility, but he declared for the draft in 2018. He was not drafted, but as an undrafted free agent, he effectively won – the Oakland Raiders kicking job, but got hurt and was unable to play last year. And now the Bears have traded a conditional 7th-round pick.
Yeah, that's only if it works out.
Well,
people get a little bit too caught up in that.
He'd have to be on the roster for five games.
And if he's on the roster for five games, it's worth it. You're talking about a 7th-round draft pick in 2 years. So I don't know how much you really are giving up. And he was also... You talked about Pinheiro. He was offered a scholarship, and I think he maybe even committed to Alabama, but he settled for Florida because it was closer to home. So he does have some skills. He does have a leg that draws the interest of NFL teams, and he was successful in college. So there's a lot to look at, but they just had in.
And he's tattooed, and he can shoot a gun.
Apparently so.
Sounds like Florida to me.
There is, I guess, on one of his social media accounts, because it was being sent around.
It was being circulated. And yeah, he's very...
there's a guy, he's at the range.
Comfortable at the
away.
Range, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's
He's got good aim.
Well, let's hope he has good aim.
He can hit a 43-yarder.
And Florida man, you know... dot, dot, dot.
Florida man. That just sounds wrong. Florida's one of the weirdest states ever.
Florida man shows good aim from 43 yards out.
I've spent some time in Florida because my brother lives down there ostensibly. And I just, like when you drive, is it 95, whatever the highway that goes through the middle of the state, it's like a bunch of like octogenarians and hot rodders. I love that idea because I sound like an octogenarian right. when I say hot rodder. But there's like people going incredibly slow right. and then people driving the speed of light. It is the weirdest. It's like being on the Autobahn.
Mm.
No?
Well, I think
am I exaggerating a little?
Yeah, maybe just slightly. I'm not going to vouch for the entire state of Florida's driving ability, but I do. I've
weird
had issues
stuff
down there.
In
yeah,
Florida.
Yeah, weird stuff happens in Florida. You're exactly right.
It's just a weird.
That's
state.
How that whole game, the Google game, Florida man, you put in there and you
Florida
Google
man.
It, and then you find out what the headline is because of bizarre headlines. Yesterday, there was a headline: Florida woman pulls alligator out of yoga pants.
Boy.
That's, during a traffic stop.
That is a tight fit.
It's a tight fit. Yeah. I don't care how good your yoga pants are. If you can fit an alligator
not,
in there.
How do you not notice that? I don't care.
I think you noticed it. She was trying to conceal it from the officers, according to the story.
Why was she trying to hide an alligator in her yoga pants?
One of those stories like, did you see this?
It's Florida. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it. It just happens.
A lot of backbiting down there.
I got it. She was pulled over in the Miami Herald. I was glancing at the Miami Herald trying to look up information on this new Bears kicker, and I found a story that said, cops to Florida woman. Do you have anything else? She pulled a gator from her pants. Okay. That's a headline that grabs you.
Is that a euphemism?
No. That's an actual headline from the Miami Herald. I still read newspapers.
Online?
Yes. Yes.
You don't like getting the ink stained?
I don't mind the ink stain.
I don't either.
I like the ink stains. Give me the broadsheet. Give me the being able to hold something in your hands. Give me the newspaper.
Okay, but we are the very fact. But I think it's very interesting. The very fact that we are sitting here talking about Eddie Pinheiro, and it is news.
It's ridiculous.
I know it's absurd, but they went through this mini camp where they had a bunch of guys come in and kick, and they ended up cutting all of them. They didn't really keep anybody, right? It wasn't like they had it wasn't like there was a ton of good options. They realized it, and then they turned around and added. They still have the kid from the AAF, right?
Elliot Fry,
and they still have
Chris Blewett from Pittsburgh, yeah.
And now
and
they've added
the third,
this
yeah.
guy.
You know, I am really torn about this story, Molly, because I keep going back and forth. Part of me is like, okay, I applaud their ability to be transparent, their willingness to put themselves out there, to invite the media to watch these guys try to win a job. The other part of me is like, and I said this flippantly at 5 of 5, would Belichick be doing this? Would he be opening these public auditions for a job that basically exposes the fact that you couldn't get it right? And had you gotten it right, you'd gone deeper in the playoffs. Would you be magnifying your biggest mistake of a season that was otherwise tremendous? I don't know. So I go back and forth in that. I'm willing to say that I'm waffling on whether or not this is a good idea or the theater of the absurd, because I don't know yet which it is. It depends on what they do. Depends on I think it depends on who they find. If they find a guy that is the solution to a problem, then way to go.
But I think it underscores a couple of different things. I think one, they have a huge hole at a very crucial position that really hurt them last year. They have been unable to resolve that. And, will this guy do it? There's a reason that we're monitoring it as closely as we are, because it is the boogeyman position now, for whatever reason. And it has been really since Robbie Gould left. Number two, I think that it's kind of fun. Because it's this weird specialty position that doesn't really have a lot to do with the crucial elements of the game. It's almost this idea that it's outside the game but of the game, and it's just kind of weird.
See, I think you're onto something there, because I think that we can have this sort of the civic, the citywide kind of joke, this inside joke about the Bears kicker, because it doesn't necessarily threaten the credibility of the entire operation.
Yes.
Because if we're having this citywide discussion over whether or not Mitch Trubisky can play, whether or not year three is going to expose him or confirm him as a franchise quarterback, that's different, because it makes people a little bit more anxious about, okay, what if we're wrong about him?
Right.
Okay, what if we're wrong about the kicker? You go find another kicker.
This is the third point I want to get to. It relates exactly to that. Why are we so concerned about whether they did it right with Mitch? Is Mitch? You know why? Because you can't find those guys. And what this underscores, the ninth guy being brought into the competition, you can't find these guys. There aren't enough kickers to go around. You have to figure out a way to get lucky with one, or to invest in one, or to not give $9 million to the wrong one. There's just not a lot of options at that position. There doesn't seem to be an obvious solution to that spot at this point.
I agree with that, and yet I believe some people would say the same thing about the quarterback position.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly the problem.
Because you don't know what you have yet, and you don't know where you can find a replacement.
And that's much scarier, because it takes the number one pick in the draft to get that guy.
You're not trying out 9 quarterbacks. Okay, in the offseason.
Right.
That's the 2010 decade for the Bears. You know, that's the progression of tryout quarterbacks that they had before Jay Cutler, and then you live through Jay Cutler, and now you think you found him. Now you think you found the guy. I guess this is a nice diversion from that, as long as we're not sitting here, third preseason game, and you're dwelling on who's going to kick field goals.
Who else can you trade for? What else do you have to get up to get it right? All right, we're going to take a quick moment. We'll bring in Len Casper, and we'll talk to Len about what went wrong and who is to blame. And can you really get upset when you just won 7 in a row? But they're knocked off the pedestal, out of first place. Len Casper will tell us why next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Here it comes.
Len Casper.
Davis in the air.
TV play-by-play man.
Can you bunt the ball on the wavelength? That's my question.
Way out of here. Hello, Sheffield.
Kevin Hart is here.
I'm going to tell you, because I don't know if anybody else has ever told you, you have an amazing voice, man. Goodness.
Thank you. Got to hear him sing.
It's like a dove. If a dove could talk, this is what it would sound like. Yeah.
That's never been told that.
Twitter.com/Len Casper.
Oh, baby, Chris Bryant.
Len Casper, talking Cubs with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 in the Score. Len Casper joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Len. How are you?
Morning, Len.
Doing great, guys. How are you today?
Oh, we're living the dream, and the Cubs have been phenomenal, and winning 7 in a row and sweeping the Cardinals, and you come home and take a 3-0 lead. You think they're going to beat Miami, but lo and behold, they have some issues late in the game, and a little bit of a brain cramp. Some guy goes walk crazy. It's hard to get worked up because this team is playing so well. It's almost... Yeah, I don't know if you want to say that it's inevitable, but it's hard to put together 8 in a row. Hard to put together a 12-game winning streak or whatever we were expecting.
Yeah, you know, if you believe in the baseball gods or whatever it is, you know, over the last week and a half, the everything kind of was going right, and you knew at some point something bad would happen, and it just so happened that the Cubs closer couldn't find the strike zone early in the ninth inning and came back to bite them. Give the Marlins credit. They were a pesky group. They don't score a lot of runs. But you're right, Mike. I think, you know, going into that game Sunday night, I think it's natural you'd say, wow, if the Cubs sweep this series, it's feeling like it could be a 10 or 11 game winning streak because the Marlins are next on the schedule. But we know that's not how baseball works. I will say this, I don't think the Cubs overlooked the Marlins last night because, as you said, they got off to that early lead and then had a lead in the ninth inning. I think the biggest regret is that they didn't add on when they had that opportunity in the sixth inning, when they had the bases loaded, nobody out, scored the run, and then were unable to tack on. It was the double play ball that really killed the Cubs' offense last night.
Len, what did you think of Carl Edwards Jr.'s return on the mound 1-2-3 inning, and what specifically did you notice about his mechanics?
I thought he was good, you know, and he looked like the same old Carl. I thought it was it wasn't a soft landing by any stretch. You're pitching in a one-run ball game in the seventh, but it was not the heart of the order, and it's not an offense that has a lot of household names, so it was a good spot for him. He looked very comfortable, and threw strikes, you know, a lot of fastballs. I think he only threw one curveball. But I thought it was an encouraging outing for him, and we know how important a 100% top of the ceiling Carl Edwards Jr. is to this bullpen. And you know, Dylan Maples got sent back to Iowa, but I was really impressed with some of the work he did while he was here, and I think he'll be back sooner than later, and I think he can also be a very big part of this bullpen.
You may have not used his name, but you certainly inferred, implied rather, that that Pedro Strop is the closer. And I thought we had agreed that there'd be no designation of that position.
That's true. I think basically the de facto closer, Joe likes to leave open the possibility to use other guys in that spot for sure. But you know, when the Cubs have a 1 or 2 run lead and he hasn't pitched in a couple of days, he's going to be the guy in the ninth. And, you know, I don't know if it was rust or if it was the weather or it was just an off night, but that was very un-Pedro-like in that he just couldn't seem to command anything and felt like once there were base runners, he really seemed to rush his delivery a little bit. And those nights will happen.
What do you think the Cubs are going to do when Mike Montgomery comes back? What role will he play?
That's a great question. They've stretched him out, David, to be a starter, and you know, you like to have that option with not a lot of off days coming up. It doesn't sound like the Cubs are building in necessarily a sixth day where they'll give a starter a break, because basically, you know, very few have pitched on 5 days rest more than once because of the off days the Cubs have had so far. But it's nice to have that guy in your back pocket in that regard. But I just think having another lefty in the bullpen is always important. And I talked to Mike the other day, and he's feeling a lot better. He had a very weird spring because of the shoulder and just kind of, you know, wasn't quite where he wanted to be physically when the season started, and feels much better about how his arm feels and the fact that he can finish all of his pitches now. Coming back from the lat injury. So I expect a much different Mike Montgomery once he's activated.
We were talking about the idea if the Cubs could make some sort of a move by the trade deadline to help the bullpen, and certainly everyone looking at the closer position. And then you start talking about, well, what do they have to trade? And you talk about some of the guys that are in the minor leagues, and it came up earlier in the program that Addison Russell would be a great person to be able to trade if you could do that. Then the idea came up, well, what do you do at shortstop? If anything, God forbid, happens to Javi, given how great he has been, what would you do? How would you cover that position if anything happened? And certainly Russell would be a perfect guy to cover that position if anything happened.
Yeah, you know, I think depth is something that, you know, you use that as a trade chip in some cases when you feel like you have, to borrow the office term, a redundancy. But I think in the end, you know, having that depth is really important. And I think it's why they won the World Series in 2016. Mm-hmm. They were covered at every position. They were covered, rotation wise, bullpen wise. They had so many good players on the entire roster, and I think you look at this team right now, even the bench, when you know, certain guys are not in the lineup, you know, every once in a while Zobrist isn't in there. Descalzo was available off the bench last night. Albert Almora came off the bench. So, you know, you add Addison Russell at some point to that mix, and I'm with you on shortstop. That is the most important defensive position on the field. Some would say catcher, but you know, that shortstop's really certainly a captain, and he's an elite defensive player at that position. So, you know, you just have to make sure when you're thinking about trades to help your team that you don't weaken an area of strength, and certainly middle of the diamond is a big strength for this club.
Len, before we let you go, I just want to thank you for your advice on the fist bump. I thought that you and Jim had a really healthy discussion last night. You know, your theory about if you go into the fist bump rather than the handshake, you got to commit to it early.
Yes.
And you're exactly right about that. If you think about it, it gets awkward only when you don't know what the other guy's going to do, and you extend your hand, and you're like, which way are we going here? So I don't know if that's trial and error, but thank you.
Yeah, I think you've got like a second and a half when you make eye contact. And within that time period, if you don't show fist bump, you got to go for the handshake.
Right. Great advice.
My kid is 15 and he's starting to do this finger lock thing. I don't know if you've experienced that nightmare. Okay. Just so you
know. I have not, but I'm sure I will now.
Avoid that. Avoid that at all costs. Great stuff, Len. Thank you.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks, fellas. Talk to you next week.
That is Len Casper.
Yeah.
I'm a big fist bump fan.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's all right.
And I'm a fan of avoiding contact.
Yeah.
With all humans.
Avoiding eye contact, Joe. Yeah.
Just contact.
Just contact.
I think it was I was watching some video. It was like Bruce Koepka and Tom Watson or something, and he went to give him a fist bump, and Tom Watson like puts his hand around his fist, doesn't know what to do with it. It was awesome.
Is there an age where the fist bump is really not your thing?
I think if you're Tom Watson, you're probably a little too old to do the fist bump.
Yeah.
You don't understand what you're doing. Oh, I'll grab your fist. Like,
you might feel, a man of a certain age might feel like he's punching somebody if he does the fist bump. Like,
he might miss. You see some of those golfers come out and they whip one right into the crowd.
It's even worse when you go for the fist bump or the handshake and then the other guy tries to go for the half hug thing.
Like, yeah.
Oh, I love the half hug.
It was good advice, though.
The reports that we got, we get reports when we get these guys up, talks about what they're working on, what they've been, accomplishing, and certainly that's been one of the things that he was working on, trying to get to the fastball a little bit better. You can see it. He looks very, very confident. His pace, his approach is really solid right now, and, that's a good thing for us and for him.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The score, that is Ricky Renteria, and he's talking about Charlie Tilson. They brought Charlie up yesterday, the White Sox outfielder. And I remember Tom Ricketts saying a long time ago that there was, I guess he called the scouting director, because Charlie Tilson was in the Cubs' backyard, right? The White Sox backyard, too, but on the North Shore. He became a Cardinal.
Yeah.
So he was drafted in the second round.
Correct?
Right. Went to New Trier. Yeah. He was drafted by the Cardinals, and Tom just made a call because he knew, I think he knew Charlie's dad. Mm-hmm. And he talked to the scouting director, like, hey, why didn't we draft this guy? Why wasn't this guy? Because he found out they were one of like five teams that didn't show up at his workout, the Cubs. And so I guess that kind of miffed him. And I love that backstory, because the idea would be, hey, if this guy ends up playing center field for the Cardinals, how did we miss the guy?
Well,
but he didn't. They traded him for Zach Duke. They traded him to the White Sox, and the White Sox immediately put Charlie out in center field. And the thought was that he was going to get his opportunity, and this was going to be an extended run. And then he blew out his hamstring in his first game with the White Sox. I think he had a single the first time at bat, and then he's out in the outfield and he's running for a ball and tore up his hamstring. And it was it the fourth injury that year, Kevin, where Sox players making their debut got injured? It was bizarre. It was just one of these really weird years. And so he had sort of he came back from the hamstring, but then had another injury, a kind of a compensatory thing where he was it his foot or something? And then he had another setback with that. So his career ended up sort of kind of going the wrong way based on these injuries. And then he came back and he was okay, but he wasn't really hitting very well. And James Fegan wrote a really good story in The Athletic that I read this morning about how Charlie didn't, how he got his base back. He got his, like, even though he was playing and had worked out and done everything you could imagine, he was really working his legs back into his swing. And finally, he's developed more power. I mean, you saw him yesterday. He hit a 400-foot double. It went off the wall. I mean, he really pounded it. And they also said that he was getting a lot of fastballs because – why are you laughing? What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at anything. No, he's getting a lot of fastballs. Yeah. He's a good story. You hope it gets better. He's 26.
This guy's sitting here laughing at me. Why can't I appreciate that story?
I hope that it continues.
Okay. Matt Davidson, Jason Coates, Kevin Smith, or do you prefer Kevon, and Charlie Tilson all got injured in their White Sox debut.
Yeah, that was rough. Rick Hahn, when they got him, was convinced he was going to be a guy that could play every day. And maybe he will become that guy. Certainly the White Sox, you needed a bright spot yesterday because they went to Cleveland.
Jerry really stepped up.
You wanted to kind of look away, and they gave you a reason to pay attention. So he's, 6 foot, 185. He can run. You saw him going first to third. He almost fell rounding second at one point yesterday. But he can move, and you hope that he can handle the fastball better than he did last year. Because if he can, then he's an asset.
I'm not talking about Charlie Tilson anymore. You've hurt my feelings by laughing at me.
I wasn't laughing
you're
at
pulling
you.
Pulling a Dustin, huh?
I wasn't. Yep. That's a
I've
total Dustin move. I
was taking my ball and going home.
I wasn't chuckling at you.
You were literally sitting there laughing, laughing out loud, and I had to ask you.
I was waiting
Bowie
for the name of the name of the screenplay. I think it's a good story.
Peoria Matt just suggested that David doesn't want the spotlight off of Bowie.
That's exactly right.
And I think there's something to
he's
that.
He's worried that okay. he's David right now.
Tilson's story is even better because he's local.
He's local. He's a local kid. Made good.
Southside Bodie is a good story. It is.
Okay. And this Crash Davis, Taylor Davis story has really got him peeved because he really thinks that's taking some of the spotlight. I was talking to him during the break about Charlie Tilson, and you know what he said to me? If you take David Bodie's numbers and stretch them out over the course of a season, it's pretty unbelievable.
No, that's totally out of context. So they're totally.
Did you not say
those
that?
Those were two different conversations.
I felt like you were talking
about how he is the next great thing on the South Side.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about local kid getting another chance after having to come back from all these injuries, everything he's done, the commitment he's had to make. I like the idea. You know, you guys laugh at me because I like Nicky Delmonico. There's good stories. There's good grinder stories.
He's an excellent story. Nicky Delmonico is excellent. I mean, overcoming what he overcame with addiction and then seeing the kind of career he's trying to put together. You pull for guys like that. They're likable. No doubt
or
about
you
it.
You pull for him, or you break down laughing at your partner for talking about it.
I wasn't laughing, and you're not supposed to notice or reveal that. I was just sort of chuckling at your pride.
I'm going to knock your ass out of the back. I'm telling you right now.
You have immense pride in Charlie Tilson.
I like the local kids, man. I do. I like those stories. I can't help it.
But there were other things
I'm
yesterday.
I'm from Chicago. I get it.
But Nova pitched well in Cleveland. You saw Yoan Moncada looking like the guy after a really quiet weekend against the Red Sox.
Boy, when he hit that home run, he hit the hell out of it. And then the way he just dropped the smoothness of that reminded me of, who did I say this morning? Robinson Cano.
Yeah, Robinson Cano was your comp.
It was ridiculous.
He attacked the baseball yesterday in Cleveland.
It was great.
His double was even more savage. It was. Just the things that you saw him do yesterday reminded you of the kind of first month that he had. And he had cooled off a little bit, and he didn't have a greatest weekend against the Red Sox, but yesterday was impressive. And, yeah, Charlie Tilson, if he can stay healthy, that's a huge if. But you like what you see, and he can be somebody that helps you, even if he's nothing more than what Bruce referred to as a placeholder for Lewis Robert. I think that's okay.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's a role for him.
Yeah.
A guy that can run like that?
Lewis Robert, I mean, again, there's another guy who struggled to stay healthy. If he can actually be on the field, that kid can do a lot of different things. Go take a look at the Panther and see what he can do. It's pretty spectacular.
The White Sox did make a couple of real bad base running blunders yesterday.
Listen, the White Sox have the worst pitching in baseball.
Yeah,
the worst
really
starting pitching in baseball. We're not going to get much into it, but the fact is, that's how bad they are. Now, The good news is they were 9-24 at this point last year, and they're 15-18, something along those lines, whatever. They're better than they were a year ago, even with the pitching as bad as it's been. And they have a team that's capable. Frank Thomas said it last night on the post game. They got a team that's capable of scoring 6 to 8 runs every night.
Wow. That's a pretty potent offense if you're able to do that.
I don't know that that's the case, but Frank says he sees it.
Yeah, I mean, James McCann's having a really good year offensively, better than maybe you expected.
Abreu's a professional hitter.
Tim Anderson, again, stays hot. He's now second in the league in hitting, and he has just been the guy that you can really count on no matter where he hits in the order. But I think that, you get contributions from guys like
Lurie Garcia's having a hell of a year.
He ran into an out at home plate, which was really annoying. But you're right. He's hitting almost 300, 299. So what is Tim Anderson doing batting as low as he is? Why is that? Why is Ricky insist on that? Why doesn't he just put him back up near the top? I don't know.
There's got to be a method to his madness.
Is there? Okay.
I mean, that's just classic overthinking right there. I understand Anderson going into that game, he had pretty poor numbers against Bauer, but I don't think it's rocket science to put your best hitters, 1, 2, 3, 4, top of the lineup. Is that really asking so much?
Maybe they are trying to tank. Maybe that's the tank is on. Maybe
no,
tanking.
I don't think so. But I don't. You're right, Kevin. You mentioned that this morning. It was like you reminded you of where he was. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I guess because they like Garcia leading off and they want to keep him at the top. Maybe that's why.
I'm fine with that. You can lead him off, but Anderson should be hitting second or third or fourth. I mean, you just mentioned he's second.
Is it Moncada hitting second?
Moncada right now is Garcia, Moncada, Abreu, and Alonso.
Yeah, he's a tough luck player. He's just hasn't had much luck. Give him a second.
Yonder Alonso, John Jay, a couple of great signings there. You could use that extra money to actually guarantee more to Machado.
What were you going to do with that? Why did you think they signed those guys?
Is that a rhetorical question?
Yes. We know what they were up to. And you know what? They didn't want to admit it because they didn't want to diminish those players. But guess what?
Well, I'm wearing my shades so that you guys don't see the shock in my eyes.
I thought we had decided to put that story to bed, Kevin. Why do you keep bringing it up every other day?
Pick it a scab.
God.
Another 5'10 first
move
pitch
on.
Today. How about that? That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's nice. Lucas Giolito, what are realistic expectations for Lucas Giolito in Cleveland today?
No hitter.
Okay. Cleveland's offense pretty bad.
111 pitches.
You want to write the rags to riches story? I'll let you continue that narrative for Lucas Giolito.
Listen, the pitching has been pretty bad. Giolito has had a couple of starts that really jump out at you as good. But for the most part, it's been up and down, for most of his career.
Right versus Boston last time out, considering how potent their offense
is.
He was good against Kansas City before he got hurt. The strikeout rate is way up for Giolito this year. He's getting more swinging strikes. He wasn't doing that at all last year. There's still something
there.
There are positive signs with a lot of different players.
I'm not saying
keep that in mind.
He's not going to throw a Kyle Hendricks, Greg Maddux game tonight. I'm not anticipating that. But there's definitely the things that you've seen that are reassuring that could be signs of improvement for Giolito.
And speaking of reassuring signs, I thought it was interesting that Eloy Jimenez was hitting home runs in batting practice. That's faster than I thought he would be back swinging a bat and looking like he's ready for a rehab assignment.
Right. So another week.
Didn't expect that this soon, did you? I thought it'd be a little bit longer.
It looked bad when it happened, and then they said it was a high ankle sprain, and then you'd think, oh, God. But he was kind of hitting off the tee. I mean, he's been progressing. Why are you laughing again?
It's a good text. I'm sorry. God, I'm going to turn away from you. There's a good text that they can make a movie about him called Charlie Tilson's War.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? We'll make David happy. We'll shift back to some kicker talk.
No.
It's Biggs time next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.